Hello, this is Maria. Welcome to the Didcot, Abingdon and Wantage talking newspaper, Dawn, recorded on Wednesday the 19th of August 2026. As usual, you'll hear a number of news items from local sources and we hope you enjoy them. I'm the editor. Our readers this week are Sue, Nadine, Alison and Rob. Our technicians are Tony and Clive and Sue is in the office. We start with a story about Albert Park in Abingdon.
Hello, this is Sue. Costs incurred as travellers forced entry to Abingdon Park. Significant costs have reportedly been incurred for the historic charity which owns an Abingdon Park after travellers forced entry to the green space over the weekend. A group of travellers, including multiple caravans, cars, loose and enclosed animals, including horses, geese and dogs, plus work vehicles and industrial machinery, arrived at Albert Park in Abingdon late on Saturday evening, August the 15th. The private park belongs to long-standing charity Christ Hospital Abingdon, which maintains the park as a community asset and has provided almshouses, education and historical stewardship to the town since 1553. A statement from the charity released on Tuesday, August the 18th, said, "A group of travellers forced entry and occupied Albert Park over the weekend. Since becoming aware of the situation, Christ Hospital has been working closely with relevant agencies, including Thames Valley Police, to assess the circumstances and determine the most appropriate course of action. The safety of park users, neighbouring residents and our beneficiaries remains our priority. We recognise that this situation has caused concern and inconvenience for people who regularly visit and enjoy Albert Park, and we are committed to restoring the park to normal use and enjoyment as swiftly as possible. We will be employing contractors to do this on our behalf and ask the public to leave this to the specialist teams. As a charity, incidents of this nature can have significant financial implications. The cost of legal advice, specialist enforcement services, security patrols, clean-up operations, and any repairs required as a result of the occupation will ultimately be met from charitable funds. These are funds that would otherwise be available to maintain community facilities, support beneficiaries, and further Christ Hospital's charitable objectives." The charity thanked people in Abingdon for their strong local support and encouraged people to support the organisation so that resources can be directed towards enhancing local facilities and supporting those in need rather than dealing with the unexpected incidents of this nature. County Councillor Tom Greenaway shared information after the group arrived on Saturday and said, "Disappointingly, while speaking with residents, several of us were sworn at by someone driving a car across the park. So please be aware of vehicles and loose animals in the immediate area where you may not usually expect them." Another report said the bar on the Victorian-era gate of the park appears to have been bent out of shape in order to open it and gain access. Officers from Thames Valley Police reportedly attended the site to engage with the group and investigate reports of crime. A spokesperson for the force said, "We have been made aware of an unauthorised encampment at Albert Park, Abingdon. We will continue to monitor the situation closely and are in contact with the landowner. We will work in partnership with the relevant agencies to assess any impact on the local community."
Hello, this is Rob. Serious road casualties in county at record low. Fewer people are being killed or seriously injured on Oxfordshire roads, new figures from the Department of Transport show. Road casualties fell to their lowest levels on record since in 2025, with 19 people killed and 216 killed or seriously injured. This is the lowest number since the rise of the motor car and a key milestone in Oxfordshire County Council's Vision Zero programme, which aims to reduce people killed and seriously injured on Oxfordshire roads by half by 2030. Robin Tucker, co-chair of the Coalition for Healthy Streets and Active Travel, COSHAT, said, "It's clear that Oxfordshire's 20-mile-an-hour zones are now saving dozens of serious injuries a year. These figures show progress, which is really measured in the lives that are still with us and the lives that are not disrupted by crashes. In particular, it shows that if you adopt a policy with known safety benefits like 20-mile-an-hour or low-traffic neighbourhoods and follow it through, it saves people from harm and shows through in the results. No people cycling and no bus, van or heavy goods vehicle occupants were killed on Oxfordshire's roads in 2025. Tragically, on Wednesday, a 65-year-old cyclist did die on Donington Bridge Road, having been involved in a crash with a car. Figures in areas with 20-mile-an-hour and 30-mile-an-hour limits dropped by 39% between 2022 and 2025, falling from 144 to 88. Reductions were also seen on roads with higher speed limits, although 2024 was a high casualty year for 40 to 60-mile-an-hour and 70-mile-an-hour routes. Hannah Kirby, co-chair of COSHAT, said, "There is a strange blind spot in society which academics have identified and called motonormativity, where they ignore the harm done by cars. Despite the overall decline, pedestrian fatalities remain a concern. No pedestrians were killed in Oxford in 2025, but five died elsewhere in the county." Sushila Dahl, chair of the Oxford Pedestrians Association, said, "We welcome the news that no pedestrians have been killed in Oxford simply for walking, but we are sorry to hear that being a pedestrian led to the deaths of five people in Oxfordshire towns. Lowering motor traffic speeds means that the people are alive today who would not be if driving speeds were faster. These statistics support our case for wider 20-mile-an-hour limits throughout Oxford as soon as possible." The County Council's Vision Zero programme aims to halve the number of people killed or seriously injured on Oxfordshire roads by 2030. Campaigners say the progress shows the value of sustained road safety measures.
Hello, this is Alison. Firefighters pushed to limit by relentless blazes. Firefighters face physical and mental exhaustion as they're forced to tackle unprecedented and relentless blazes during the hottest summer on record. This summer, the county has seen devastating fires at farms, a school, landfill site, and forest while under drought conditions and experiencing record-breaking heat. Lee Newport, acting chair of the Oxfordshire Fire Brigade Union, based at Didcot Fire Station, said staff were burned out and has called for support, describing this summer as a crisis point. He said, "I cannot emphasise enough how busy it has been in Oxfordshire. We're at crisis point now in this country." Mr Newport said he's never experienced anything like this summer's blazes in his 22 years in the fire service, saying this is unprecedented. He described going out to a call out, coming back and servicing kit, only to be called out again, saying the fires are relentless, citing Goring Heath, Blueberry Farm and Greenways landfill blazes as just some of those that have seen crews called out from his station. The union is calling for government funding for wildfire-specific protective equipment and gear. Mr Newport explained the kit that firefighters are using is not designed for the continuous nature of wildfire and field blazes. He said, "We just need support. It's physically and mentally exhausting." The General Secretary of the union, Steve Wright, has also served across Oxfordshire. He's been speaking out on the situation, which he's calling a national emergency, and has received government confirmation that there will be a national wildfire summit. Mr Wright explained how fire services have had to pool resources, saying 5,000 more firefighters are needed. Last month, Oxfordshire fire crews were sent to Suffolk to help with a major wildfire incident there. Previously, a spokesperson for Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service said, "We have crews and resources in place to provide emergency response across Oxfordshire." Oxford East MP Annalise Dodds, Labour, said, "This spring and summer's sustained, record-breaking hot temperatures have only underlined how the climate crisis is already affecting us here in the UK. Our brave firefighters and other emergency workers have been at the sharp end of trying to protect people from the very worst impact." She said she will continue to push for action. Green County councillors Robin Jones and James Barlow wrote to the Oxfordshire Chief Fire Officer and his deputies, thanking them and their crews for their exceptional help given to the many people struggling with the frightening impacts of the recent extreme heat and drought.
Hello, this is Nadine. Support pours in on anniversary of PC Harper's death. A police force has thanked the public for the extraordinary outpouring of support it received on the 7th anniversary of PC Harper, Andrew Harper's death. The Thames Valley police officer from Wallingford, Oxfordshire, died on the 15th of August 2019 after being dragged by a car as three teenagers fled the scene of a quad bike theft in Berkshire. The case returned to the spotlight recently after it emerged that two of his killers could be released early, and a petition to block this from happening has been signed more than a million times. The police force's chief constable said the killing had a profound impact on communities across the region, and they had never forgotten his service and sacrifice. Jesse Cole and Albert Bowers were sentenced to 13 years for PC Harper's manslaughter in 2020, but could be released next year under plans to tackle prison overcrowding. But last week, Prime Minister Andy Burnham asked his Justice Secretary to find a way to keep them from behind bars. A third man, jailed for manslaughter, the vehicle's driver, Henry Long, was given a longer 16-year jail term and cannot be considered for the new early release conditions. Thames Valley Police said the concern about the early release of Cole and Bowers extended far beyond the Thames Valley, and it had received thousands of letters and messages of support. Chief Constable Jason Hogg said, "Over recent weeks, we have seen an extraordinary level of support from members of the public, colleagues across policing, and people from all walks of life." He said the case has become a broader debate about justice, public confidence, and the sacrifice of emergency workers, and the impact of early offender release on victims. It also reflects a wider expectation that decisions relating to serious offenders are subject to rigorous scrutiny, and that the voices of bereaved families are heard throughout the process, he added.
Housing estate still missing allotments. Allotments promised to residents at Great Western Park in Didcot years ago have still not been delivered. Didcot West County Councillor Ian Swindon has highlighted the lack of allotments at the 3,300 home estate, which was completed about 4 years ago. It's the latest example of a lack of community provision for the large estate. Residents have been waiting a decade for a new GP surgery run by Woodlands Medical Centre. The medical centre appointed London-based Apsley Henley Med Limited after Asura's proposal for the new surgery building was deemed unaffordable. While plans for the centre now appear to be moving forward, Mr Snowden is frustrated there has been very little progress with the proposed allotments. He posted on Facebook, "The first allotments were supposed to be delivered before the 1,000th home, the second allotments before the 2,000th home, and the final provision before the 3,300 home development was completed about 4 years ago. In August 2026, we are still waiting for the first allotments to open." Mr Snowden said a photo of the allotments land close to Ash Way from 2023 showed a construction compound with rubble, machinery, containers and construction materials instead of a car park for the allotments. He added, The latest officer update says remaining roadworks and a car park should start imminently, with the hope of achieving practical completion towards the end of September. There will still be the transfer of the land from Taylor Wimpey to the council, arrangements with the town and parish councils, and then the allocation of plots to residents. Mr. Snowden warned there was still no specific date for the delivery of the allotments, which would turn areas of underused or underdeveloped land into attractive green spaces. Allotments across the town are already under significant pressure, with demand for plots outstripping supply, the county councillor added. Mr. Snowden said, "These new allotments at Great Western Park were supposed to help relieve that pressure and provide much-needed additional capacity for a rapidly growing community. Instead, after years of delay, residents are still waiting, meaning the pressure on existing allotment provision has only increased. These allotments weren't an optional extra. They were planned as part of the infrastructure needed to support thousands of new homes. They should have been relieving pressure years ago. After thousands of new homes have been built, residents shouldn't have to wait years and years for the infrastructure they were promised." Developers Taylor Wimpey told the BBC in 2024, "We have completed all necessary steps, including submitting all relevant paperwork and soil testing results to South Oxfordshire District Council and Vale of Whitehorse District Council." The company added that it remained committed to deliver the allotments to the residents as soon as possible.
Permission granted to fell historic tree. Permission has been given to fell an iconic tree after experts declared it to be an irreversible decline. Estimated to be 150 years old, the horse chestnut on the Kinecroft in Wallingford has been monitored for years by arboriculture specialists who reported more recent signs of disease despite previous pruning. Having applied for permission, South Oxfordshire District Council has now let tree surgeons get on with the job of chopping it down. Wallingford Town Council said, "It's with real sadness that we share our intention to remove the historic horse chestnut tree on the Kinecroft. For generations, this tree has been a familiar part of the Wallingford's landscape and has been part of the lives of countless residents and visitors. We know how much it means to the Carr community, which is why this has been an incredibly difficult decision." Located in one of the town's busiest public open spaces and close to neighbouring homes, the tree's failing health presents a safety risk. The council said it has a legal duty of care to protect public safety. Remedial pruning had previously been carried out in an attempt to prolong the tree's life, but repeated inspections, including specialist internal decay detection surveys, confirmed that it couldn't be safely retained. Because the tree stands within a conservation area, formal consent was required before any work could take place. The council added, "Although the loss of such a mature tree can never truly be replaced, Wallingford Town Council is committed to planting a replacement tree on the Kinecroft. While it will take many years to mature, we hope it will become part of the lives of future generations, just as the horse chestnut has been for so many people today." The council is also exploring ways to commemorate the tree and preserve its legacy. Further details will be shared in due course.
Cooling off with wheelchair wash. A care home is helping residents beat the heat with a wheelchair-friendly car wash experience. Elmbrook Court in Wantage has set up a wheelchair wash for its residents as temperatures climb. The wheelchair wash includes a rainbow water arch, a gentle rinse for residents under the sprinklers, and a quick wheel scrub, all set to the sound of Rolls-Royce's car wash. Sharon Otley, Lifestyles Manager at Elmbrook Court, said, "Water's so refreshing and we wanted to make it accessible for everyone. We made it a bit of fun."
New date set for Council Fireworks Spectacular. A major Oxfordshire fireworks display has been postponed due to an extreme risk of fire. The Abingdon International Fireworks Festival will now take place on Saturday, April the 10th, 2027, after organisers deemed it unsafe to proceed during the current period of prolonged dry weather. The decision follows recent wildfires across the UK and ongoing concerns about the potential danger to people, property and the environment. In a statement, organisers said, "It is with enormous disappointment that we confirm Abingdon International Fireworks Festival has been postponed until Saturday, 10th of April 2027. This is not a decision we have taken lightly. An extraordinary amount of work has gone into creating this event, not only designing and preparing the incredible displays, but months of planning, risk assessments, countless safety meetings, and the development of an extensive fire mitigation plan. We reached the predetermined trigger point within our safety planning last week, at which postponement became the responsible decision. There is some very welcome rain in the forecast, but unfortunately will not be sufficient to reverse the effects of the prolonged dry weather or reduce the extreme risk, fire risk, to a level at which we believe it would be responsible to proceed." Organisers of the event, which claims to be the UK's biggest fireworks display, emphasise that the safety of the community and emergency responders was their top priority. They said no fireworks display, however spectacular, is worth risking people's homes, livelihoods, our countryside, or the safety of those who would have to respond if something went wrong. So, rather than take the risk, we're moving the festival to Saturday, April the 10th, 2027, during the Easter holidays. All existing tickets will remain valid for the new date. Standard admission ticket holders who are unable to attend on 2027 can request a transfer to the Abingdon Funfair and Fireworks event on Saturday, November the 14th. However, ticket transfers are not available for VIP tickets, and all tickets remain non-refundable. Organisers acknowledge the disappointment and disruption caused by the postponement. They said, "We know this will be disappointing for many of you. We are devastated too. There are enormous financial and practical consequences to postponing an event of this scale, but ultimately, doing the right thing has to come before anything else. It follows the driest July on record for the country, when only 7 millimetres of rain was measured, or 10% of the average. Oxford saw even less than that."
Post office closes until further notice. A post office in Abingdon has shut and will be closed until further notice after first experiencing disruptions caused by technical issues. The post office branch in the North Court Road Co-op Food has closed its doors to customers for an indefinite time, a sign on the shop door confirms. It was first shut around 2 weeks ago, citing technical issues for the temporary disruption to services. The entire shop closed between April and June last year from a major refurbishment, which required the store to be empty of customers for their own safety.
Piece of aviation history returns to base. An iconic piece of aviation history has returned to an RAF base in Oxfordshire. RAF Benson's iconic Spitfire Gate Guardian replica is back after undergoing extensive refurbishment. It was removed on May the 12th for a temporary essential restoration and repainting project. The aircraft was reinstalled with the help of the Joint Aircraft Recovery and Transportation Squadron. Personnel at the station expressed gratitude for the efforts of those involved in lifting and securing the historic aircraft back on its pedestal. A statement for RAF Benson said, She's back and looking magnificent. After undergoing an extensive refurbishment, our beloved Spitfire Gate Guardian has been reinstalled at RAF Benson. A massive thank you to the Joint Aircraft Recovery and Transportation Squadron and the dedicated personnel who managed to lift and secure this iconic piece of aviation history back onto her pedestal. RAF Benson, near Wallingford, plays a crucial role in supporting both UK and overseas military operations.
Finishing touches made to Palace's £12 million restoration. A £12 million restoration is set to bring new shine to a county landmark 300 years in the making. Blenheim Palace in Woodstock is preparing to unveil the results of its most ambitious conservation project yet. The two-year scheme focused on repairing and preserving the palace roof, safeguarding its historic architecture for generations to come. Heather Carter, Managing Director of Blenheim Palace, said, "The success of this project is a result of an exceptional collaborative effort across a whole team of specialists, from our conservation engineers, architects and consultants, to our project managers, heritage, operations and maintenance teams, all working together behind the scenes to protect and restore this extraordinary building for future generations. It's been a massive effort. The project is not just about preserving our past, it's about creating new ways for visitors to engage with our history now and well into the future. As the scaffolding comes down, visitors will soon be able to enjoy the restored palace in its full glory. This includes the return of the Britannia statue to the Oxfordshire skyline and the now visible columns of the Great Court. The saloon will begin to be revealed in mid-August, with conservation work on the lower wall paintings continuing until September. A tunnel will be installed in the Great Hall to allow for the safe removal of remaining scaffolding and coverings, while the final stages of the restoration will take place on the South Lawn. The Louis XIV statue will once again be visible, framed by the renewed palace roofline. Re-leading the roof, repairing and replacing slates across key areas, and increasing gutter capacity by more than 300% is also part of the restoration. It also included the restoration of an unusual artwork in the North Portico roof, a collection of painted eyes commissioned by Gladys Deacon, the second wife of the 9th Duke of Marlborough. Every penny of visitor funds contributes directly to this vital conservation effort. Blenheim Palace first opened to the public 75 years ago to fund a similar roof repair project, and revenue from visitors remains critical to its ongoing conservation. To support broader access, the Palace is currently offering reduced admission through summer VAT savings and split payments for tickets over £80 with Klarna. The palace is a living piece of history, home to the Dukes of Marlborough since 1705, and set within more than 2,000 acres of parkland designed by Capability Brown. It's also the birthplace of Sir Winston Churchill and houses one of the most important and extensive collections in Europe.
Anniversary celebration for Golden Age Club members. Memories of the swinging 60s came flooding back at a club celebration lunch near Didcot. Members of East Hendred's Golden Age Club gathered to celebrate its diamond anniversary with a summer lunch. The celebrations last month included entertainment based on 1960s and 1970s songs performed by local singer Dom Hones. Some members dressed in 1960s fashions, and the tables displayed sparkling decorations and vases of flowers. Union flags were waved enthusiastically to celebrate England's World Cup triumph in 1966, and the grand raffle featured prizes donated by members. The club began in 1966 when a committee was formed to organise a monthly tea party for the local over 70s. At that time, it was linked to the Berkshire Voluntary Committee for Old People, the BVC, and Clara Williams liaised with them to provide care and welfare for members.
That is the last article of our first 12 news items. On the notice board this week, we don't have any Dawn subscriber birthdays, but sadly there are 8 deaths announced in our area. Gordon Cowan, age 92, Pamela Dunning, age 96, Ingrid Eaton, age 91, Daphne Jarvis, age 94, Ronald, known as Ron Moore, age 92, Peter Peck, aged 89, Martin Smith, aged 92, and the Reverend Canon Peter Turbitt, aged 82, who was formerly parish priest at St John Vianney Catholic Church in Wantage. All will be missed by their friends and families. We've just got time to look at some events which happened this week in history. In 1856, condensed milk was patented. In 1883, French designer Coco Chanel was born. In 1987, Michael Ryan shot dead 16 people in Hungerford, Berkshire, and then killed himself. In 1991, President Gorbachev of Russia was toppled from power in a coup. And in 2008, cyclist Chris Hoy won his third gold medal at the Beijing Games, making him Britain's most successful Olympian at a single Olympics for 100 years. We now go back to the news and start with an item about Families Day at RAF Benson.
RAF Benson gives thanks for fantastic Families Day. RAF Benson has extended a heartfelt thank you to organisers and attendees after what was described as a fantastic Families Day. The South Oxfordshire Air Base hosted the annual Community Day on Wednesday, August the 14th, marking the special occasion to celebrate and thank the families of the service personnel, civil servants and contractors at the base. Around 3,500 guests were welcomed to the station on the day, enjoying air shows and taking to the skies with Chinook crews to return to bacon butties and children's activities. Wing Commander Alice Tierney, Station Commander, said, "It was wonderful to meet some of our families on station. Celebrating our people is one of the highlights of my role, and I hope everyone enjoyed their experiences." Stalls on the ground showcased the talent of the airbase personnel, plus local businesses, charities and station clubs and societies. As the event coincided with VJ Day, Second World War era vehicles and aircraft were on display, and air displays featured the Lancaster, Spitfire in photo reconnaissance unit colours, P-51 Mustang and 2 Harvard training aircraft in homage to the base's military history. The RAF Falcons parachute team and the Chinook roll demonstration team wowed the crowd with their spectacular performances, and the entertainment continued into the evening with live music, food and drinks. Squadron Leader Elliot, event lead, said, "RAF Benson extends heartfelt thanks to everyone who attended and helped make the day such a success."
Social Enterprise's most ambitious venue to date. Founders of a social enterprise who work with former prisoners have described the opening of their latest venue as the culmination of its work over the last decade. TAP Social Movement, based in Oxford, has opened a day release at a new £14 million social and retail space at Milton Park, a science and technology business hub near Didcot. The cafe and bar brings together TAP Social's bakery, pizza kitchen, cafe, bar, brewing school and events under one roof for the first time. The social enterprise said it continued its mission to create meaningful employment opportunities for people with lived experience of the criminal justice system while creating a welcoming place for everyone. TAP Social has been distributing beer from its craft brewery since 2016 and has a tap room in Botley, It also has an artisan bakery in Kennington, while day release in Milton Park would employ around 16 staff. It said that since its foundation, it had created more than 115,000 hours of paid employment for people in prison and prison leavers. Co-founder and director Tess Taylor said it was their most ambitious venue to date. Day release is the culmination of everything that Tap Social has built over the last decade. Every coffee served, every meal shared, and every shift worked helps create opportunities for people rebuilding their lives after contact with the criminal justice system. Claire Fleet, asset manager for Milton Park, said day release perfectly embodies the vision that Signal Yard had been designed with. From the very beginning, our ambition was to create somewhere with character and purpose, championing independent businesses that bring something genuinely different to Milton Park and the wider community. Tap Social is an exceptional organisation. Not only do they produce outstanding food, coffee and craft beer, they also transform lives by creating meaningful employment opportunities for people with convictions.
Shark House hits 40th anniversary. Oxford's iconic Headington shark, which can be found lodged on a house roof, is celebrating its 40th anniversary this week. It was exactly four decades ago on Monday that the 25-foot fiberglass sea creature appeared overnight at a terraced house in New High Street. It was commissioned by Bill Heiner, an American-born journalist and broadcaster who came to Oxford in the 1960s to study at Oxford University. He was a popular presenter at BBC Radio Oxford, a much-loved columnist for the Oxford Times and our daily sister paper, the Oxford Mail. Bill came up with the idea while sitting on a doorstep opposite his newly purchased house. Chatting with his sculptor friend, John Buckley, over a glass of wine, he asked Mr. Buckley, "Can you do something to liven it up?" He's also said he intended it to be a protest against the American bombing of Libya, while also describing it as a statement about nuclear weapons. Mr. Buckley worked with a group of volunteers for 3 months, building the shark on an artificial roof created outside his studio. No one knew where it was going to be sighted. At 5 a.m. on August the 9th, 1986, he drove the shark to New High Street on a tractor trailer, where a large crane was waiting. The shark was slotted into the roof just as the postman was passing, said Mr. Buckley. A six-year planning row immediately erupted. Oxford City Council opposed the installation, stating it was dangerous to the public, but engineers and inspectors pronounced it structurally safe. Mr. Heiner then submitted a planning application, which was rejected, so he appealed to Michael Heseltine, who was the Environment Secretary at the time. The council held public forums where people could speak for or against the sculpture, and people came from far afield to defend what they saw as art. Mr. Heseltine's planning inspector ultimately came out in favour of the sculpture in a landmark ruling for town planners. He said the council's fears about a proliferation of sharks and heaven knows what else crashing through roofs all over the city were exaggerated. To preserve the shark, Bill's son Magnus bought the house in 2016, and it's now a star attraction on Airbnb. The property sleeps 12 guests and currently boasts a 4.65 rating on the rental site. One guest reviewing his stay wrote, "A great location and a fun house, something to talk about and remember for years later." Mr. Heiner died of cancer, aged 74, in 2019, and tributes flooded in from many locals, including many city councillors.
Plea to take extra care over fires after another field blaze. A desperate plea has been issued for people to protect against fires as fields around Wantage and Grove burn. Wantage Town Council, the police and Vale of the White Horse District Council have put out statements asking for people to take extra care over the risk of spreading fires. It follows record temperatures this summer, which has seen fields across the south of the county dry out and people swelter in conditions up to 36 degrees Celsius. Altogether, this heat has come a large number of fires around the country, including in South Oxfordshire, with a major field fire occurring on Sunday evening at Armstrong Avenue Grove, with three crews involved. A spokesperson for Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service said crews used hose reels and beaters, assisted by a water carrier vehicle, to extinguish a fire in the field. Eyewitness Simon of Wellington Gate said, "I've never seen so many people on the street of the estate, checking it out for peace of mind to ensure that it has been put out." He added the fire brigade did a great job, as always. This followed the police reporting on a recent fire started by over 20 teenagers, which the force called one of the most reckless things we have come across in some time. This was by an abandoned barn, with the officers dispersing the group and ensuring both fires were fully extinguished. They said, "We would urge parents and guardians to speak with their teenagers about the dangers of lighting fires, especially during such dry conditions. What might seem like harmless fun could very quickly have led to a major incident." Such is the seriousness of the issue, Prime Minister Andy Burnham sanctioned a controversial special national alert on Friday, August the 14th. Appearing on all phones, it reported a very high risk of wildfires nationally and encouraged people not to use disposable barbecues, fire pits, garden incinerators or fireworks. The councils have also shared their own warnings. A spokesperson for Vale of the White Horse District Council said, "When it comes to fire safety, we urge everyone to follow the advice of the relevant authorities, in particular the emergency services. The council will share the government advice to help minimise the risk of wildfires." Meanwhile, Wantage Town Council released a special message sharing advice from Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service, including to not discard cigarettes or matches on the ground. It also asked people not to park on dry grass or vegetation, as heat from underneath can cause a fire. The spokesman added, "With hot and dry weather increasing the risk of grass and countryside fires, we are asking residents and visitors to take extra care when enjoying Wantage's parks, open spaces and surrounding countryside. Fires can start very easily in dry conditions and spread very quickly."
Heritage at Work. Abingdon Heritage Festival on the 19th and 20th of September explores the theme Agriculture to Atoms. What did the people of Abingdon do for work 100, 150 or even 200 years ago? Who made the clothes we wore, the beer we drank and the inventions that helped shape the modern world? These are the fascinating questions at the heart of Abingdon-on-Thames Heritage Festival on the 19th and 20th of September, where this year's theme, Agriculture to Atoms, explores the remarkable story of the town's working lives and its journey from rural market town to a centre of scientific innovation. For generations, agriculture provided the foundations of Abingdon's economy. Local crops supplied the brewing and malting industries, while animal hides supported the leatherworks. But it was the creativity, skill and determination of local people that transformed these resources into products that became part of the town's identity. Thousands of women found employment in the clothing factory, once one of the largest in the country, while local printers produced auction notices, posters and theatre playbills. The late Victorian period also saw huge improvements to everyday life, with clean water, better roads and a modern sewerage system, helping to create a healthier environment for a growing population. The 20th century brought another dramatic change, with nearby Harwell and Culham placing Abingdon at the forefront of atomic research and scientific discovery. The arrival of these pioneering industries brought thousands of new residents and transformed the character of the town. Visitors will be able to discover the changing nature of employment, the heritage of car manufacture, and the lives of ordinary people between 1800 and 1960 through displays, films and exhibitions at the Guildhall and Unit 25 Berry Street. Beyond the exhibitions, the festival will open the doors of around 10 historic buildings across the town, including some that are rarely accessible to the public. Visitors can also enjoy beautiful displays from Abingdon Flower Club and local artists, Saxon reenactments and special trails at the museum, family-friendly activities and the popular heritage walks on the Sunday. Whether you have lived in Abingdon all your life or are discovering the town for the first time, the Heritage Festival offers a wonderful opportunity to step back in time and uncover the stories of the workers, innovators, and communities who shape the town we know today.
Cash boost to protect ancient sites along prehistoric trail. A major archaeological project has secured a funding boost to help protect ancient monuments along one of Britain's oldest routes. The Historic Ridgeway project has been awarded £129,100 from Historic England's Regional Capacity Building Grant Programme to continue its work until May 2028. Funding will allow the scheme, which supports hands-on conservation and community engagement along the Historic Ridgeway National Trail, which passes through Oxfordshire, to expand its reach into Buckinghamshire for the first time. Otis Gilbert, Heritage at Risk Project Officer, said, "We are delighted to be able to offer this grant to continue the vital work on the nationally significant archaeology around the Ridgeway National Trail." He said, "It's an important way of working with local people, DEFRA and local authorities, to support better management of the historic and natural environment in England's most special places. The project will provide new opportunities for people to get involved in caring for archaeology near them." The project, supported by a team including a project manager and volunteer coordinator, undertakes conservation activities, public engagement, and volunteer-led heritage recording. Much of the hands-on work is delivered with the backing of landowners and an active network of volunteers, with funding for individual conservation schemes coming from project partners. Dan Bashford, project manager, said, "Every section of the Ridgeway National Trail has its own archaeological story to tell. Extending the project into Buckinghamshire will help us to identify and record vulnerable heritage sites, improve our understanding of how people have used this landscape over thousands of years, and put practical conservation measures into place to protect them for the future." Until now, the project has focused on a 30-mile central stretch of the 87-mile Ridgeway Trail in Oxfordshire and West Berkshire. The new funding and territorial extension will allow the team to continue into Buckinghamshire. At the heart of the Historic Ridgeway project is the condition and stewardship of the trail's 47 scheduled monuments, all of which are legally protected.
Solar boat trip in heatwave, not all smooth sailing. Making the most of the ongoing sunny weather, a married couple are attempting to travel 124 miles down the River Thames, all in a solar-powered boat. Tim Knox's vessel is using only the power of the sun to travel from Lechlade in Gloucestershire to Teddington in southwest London. Knox said he had been building solar-powered boats for the past 15 years, and that the main reason behind his latest creation was, "My wife doesn't like solar energy, but I wanted to build a boat that she really liked going on because I absolutely adore being on the water. I'm one of the water people," he said. The couple are taking the journey as the UK experiences yet another heatwave, which should provide the vessel with plenty of energy for its solar-powered battery. But just days into their expedition, Knox said the weather had also hindered the trip. The water shortages are causing a little bit of an issue, which is adding a bit of stress to the whole thing. It's become a torture test for the boat, and for me and my wife, he said. He said timetabled lock opening times, implemented due to low water levels, had left the boat needing to rush between them. The mad thing about the boat is that if you go at a gentle speed, you can easily do it on solar power. But we've had to rush between locks, he said. So, just like with a car, if you go fast, you use more fuel. It's eking into my battery power. Knox said the days on the water had been more grueling than he had predicted. During their voyage, the couple will take in Oxfordshire towns along the Thames, including Abingdon, Wallingford and Henley. The boat, which Knox has named Dayboat 1, is set to reach Teddington, at which point its captain said he might be silly enough to carry on to the tidal times in central London.
Reading royalty. Well done to Wantage volunteer Laura Kenyon Slaney, who has been honoured by the Queen for 9 years of changing young lives through books with the School Readers Charity. An Oxfordshire volunteer who has helped thousands of children discover the joy of reading has been recognised at a special national event attended by Queen Camilla and Paddington Bear. Laura Kenyon-Slaney was invited to the British Library as part of the National Year of Reading 2026 celebration, recognising her contribution to children's literacy through the charity School Readers. Laura has volunteered at St James's Church of England Primary School in Wantage since 2017, delivering almost 3,000 one-to-one reading sessions. Her dedication has helped countless children improve their reading skills, confidence, and enjoyment of books. During the event, Laura enjoyed tea with Queen Camilla, and enjoyed fellow literacy champions in celebrating the power of reading to transform young lives. Reading has always been a huge joy in my life, said Laura. I wanted to help children discover how reading can open up new worlds, build confidence, and create opportunities throughout their lives. Alongside supporting pupils directly, Laura has helped grow School Readers Oxfordshire Network from just 6 volunteers to 89. She's also helped raise more than £250,000 for the charity.
River crossing aims to cut congestion. Work is underway on the long-awaited Didcot to Culham river crossing. The project forms a key part of Oxfordshire County Council's wider HIF1 infrastructure scheme. It aims to improve transport links, reduce congestion and support sustainable travel. Councillor Liz Leffman, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Highways, Construction and Repair, said, "The Didcot to Culham river crossing will significantly reduce congestion in the area and provide a safe route for walkers and cyclists. In particular, it will help relieve congestion at the existing historic river crossings through Sutton Courtenay Culham villages and also at Clifton Hampden."
Flying Scotsman to steam in for rides at Railway Centre. World-famous steam locomotive, the Flying Scotsman, will travel through Oxfordshire later this year. The engine will haul passenger trips from Didcot Parkway on October the 17th and 18th as part of its newly announced 2026 programme. Each journey will cover a 133-mile route through scenic countryside and historic railway towns, including Newbury, Reading, Westbury and Swindon. The mainline return has been organised by Fox and Edwards Events in partnership with 22 Heritage Lines and in collaboration with Northern Steam Vintage Trains and the National Railway Museum. First-class and traditional seating options are available, with return tickets at £99. The full events calendar is available on the National Railway Museum website.
Private dog walking paddock opens. A private dog walking paddock has opened up near Didcot. The 3-acre field in West Hagbourne is open for dog walkers to privately walk their dogs in a safe and secure field away from other people, dogs or animals. The field, between London Road and the A34, has been transformed to accommodate all dog breeds and owners with space for up to 15 dogs. The paddock opened on Friday, August the 7th, and owners can now book weeks in advance to walk their dog. Owners of the field plan to install a shelter in the field amid the rising temperatures. The field is open from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. 1 to 3 dogs is £10 an hour, 4 to 5 is £12, and over 6 dogs is £15. Another field in the area, Hagbourne Dog Field, located in West Hagbourne on the outskirts of Didcot, is a 1.5-acre field that opened in 2022.
Blenheim Palace has announced the arrival of its newest work experience placements. 7 sheepdog puppies, born to the head shepherd's collie, Nan. After an apprentice period, one puppy will permanently join the Blenheim team, and the rest will join other teams. Blenheim's working dogs help care for the flock of 1,000-plus sheep, moving them from field to pen and about the estate. Full sheepdog training can take up to 2 years, after which point the new puppy will become a fully-fledged member of the estate team at this UNESCO World Heritage Site.
That is the last news item for this week. I thank the Herald and other local sources for the items used, and I thank our readers, Sue, Alison, Nadine and Rob. If you have any comments to make on this production, please phone the Dawn Secretary, Karen, on 07939 265 517. We hope you've enjoyed listening to the newspaper. Goodbye and thank you for listening.